You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom. I am Kyle Meinke, Lions beat writer for MLive, joined as always by Ben Raven. A little bit different format today, Ben. We're ditching the mailbag, and I think for a very good reason.
Yeah.
We had a good chat with Eric Kramer, the former Lions quarterback, who has written a book called The Ultimate Comeback. He'll join us to talk about the book and his really, I mean, it's a really remarkable story of perseverance. I mean, if you don't know, you're going to find out, but basically the man put a bullet in his own head and has lived to tell about it. And I think it's a really cool thing to see Ben, him using his platform to speak about his experience with depression and everything that he went through, and his story of perseverance. He also happens to be the last Lions quarterback to win a playoff game in 91 and last Lions quarterback to start a home playoff game. So with the Lions at 8-3, kind of an opportune time to welcome back a guy who has a really great story to tell.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great, heart-wrenching story. And, you know, props to Eric, because not only does he not back away from his past, but he's embracing it and kind of moving forward with his life, like, you know, finding how to live with purpose. So, yeah, there's definitely a little suicide warning on this episode, if that is a sensitive topic for you, just a heads up there, because this is, you know, Eric's going to talk about losing his teenage son. He's going to talk about trying to take his own life. And as I alluded to, he does not spare details, thoughts, both things that happened or things that were going through his head. So, yeah, just definitely prepare yourself for this one if that's a sensitive topic.
He's also going to talk about starting playoff football games for the Detroit Lions. So, again, trigger warning.
Also that, yes.
it hasn't happened in 30 years, Ben, that the Lions have played a, you know, a home playoff game, or it's been even longer, you know, since 91, since they won a playoff game. He was the guy under center for that game. I asked him about it. That was pretty cool. I guess, Ben, you know, the Lions are, I know that Thanksgiving was pretty big disappointment. They played poorly. One of the biggest upsets in Thanksgiving history, actually. But despite that, the Lions are still 8-3. They have a 2.5 game lead heading into December. I got really curious this week, and because of the long break, I had some rare downtime. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to look up the last time the Lions led by 2.5 games in the month of December. And I had to go way back to 1954.
That's a lot.
So this is uncommon stuff, man. So I know that for as bad as the Lions played on Thanksgiving, and really going back to the Bears game, or even defensively to the Chargers game, it's been a real slide for them. 31 points allowed on average in those games, second worst in the league. It's bad stuff, but their goals are still ahead of them. They're still 8-3. They have total control of the division, second best record in the NFC. So, Ben, I guess my question for you is, what's your temperature on this team heading into December and beyond?
You know, it's still very high. I think they're still very clearly the class of the NFC North. You know, I think maybe the Packers are going to finish better than people thought, but if you watch Monday Night Football between the Bears and the Vikings this past week.
Yeah. I did not, and I consider myself very lucky.
And I did. I watched that game from start to finish, and I hated absolutely every second of it. So just, I feel good. Obviously, the problems on defense are real. They're there, and the big concern moving forward is, what the heck does this struggling defense look like without Alex Anzalone in the middle? Yeah. So that's a big-time concern. You know, that's why I say lukewarm, because of all the things you said, of all the firsts they've accomplished this season, you know, they're going to win 10-plus games. They're going to host a playoff game this year. You know, they're going to win the division. So keep that in perspective. But at the same time, be real about this defense, because the pressure's been inconsistent. The coverage has been lacking, specifically at the number two spot, with teams really, I mean, Jerry Jacobs was the only corner targeted more than three times last week. I mean, teams they found that weakness and they're going for it. So like those problems aren't going away. And reinforcements aren't really on the way, at least right now. So that's why I'm lukewarm.
Look, here's my temperature. My temperature is we're in year three of an exhaustive rebuild, tearing apart every corner of this franchise. And because it happened so long ago, I think we forget about it. But that includes quarterback.
Yeah,
these are like really difficult things the Lions have put themselves through. And I think they're way ahead of where anyone expected them to be when we were in, like, say, like November of 2021, when they're, 1-7 or whatever it was. I mean, like, now they've ruled the North. They're going to win the North. They're going to host a playoff game in year three of this rebuild.
Yeah.
Like, they're a good team and certainly way better than anyone expected them to be at this point. I also think it's fair that with the way they started this year and how they look at their best, that bar gets raised. Like people don't just want a playoff entrant anymore. They want to see home playoff games. They want to see playoff wins. And to advance in the postseason, you generally have to be an elite team. And while the Lions, I think, are very good, I don't think they're elite. Not yet. I think they have too many holes on defense to be elite. They allow too many plays against too many, like basically any quarterback who's worth a damn. And you're going to see those kind of quarterbacks in the postseason. I just think they lack personnel on that side of the ball to win one-on-one. That's what I see on the tape outside of guys like Aiden Hutchinson. And let's be frank, these days, Alex Anzalone.
Yeah.
He has been one of their best players on defense this season. He's not like a star linebacker in the league, but he's a very good linebacker who covers well. He's pressured better than ever before. Already has career highs and, you know, hits, hurries, all that kind of stuff. Sacks with three of them. And I think losing him is going to be a real blow. Derek Barnes has shown flashes. Jack Campbell, I think, is pretty far behind where I expected him to be. Malcolm Rodriguez got benched for a reason. Like, that's going to be the mix for the next couple of weeks. And I think it's going to be rough sledding for a defense that has really – it's been one of the league's worst.
No, and I mean, Anzalone is – I mean, he's legit been playing like a star. Like, he's been playing so far above where we thought he could ever play. So, yeah, that's a huge miss. So, yeah, they've thrown Jack Campbell to the fire. It's been more down than up. You know, there have been signs of growth, but, like, he is, like you said, you know, we say it about Jameson Williams for pick 18 for a first round pick. Yeah. You know, it's fair to say not where you thought he'd be right now, but they're counting on him to be where they need him to be these next couple of weeks. But yeah, it's a very, very, like you said, they're way ahead of schedule. They're going to win the North this year. It seems like they're going to host a playoff game. So like big picture wise, feel happy, but yeah, be ready for that defensive breakdown, because when you watch the Eagles take every shot the Bills have and still win that game the way they do, there's a definite clear divide between teams like the Eagles, the 49ers, and the Lions.
Yeah, the Lions might not be elite, but they are very good. They are 8-3. They traveled to New Orleans for a very winnable game this week, and with the way their final month is shaping up, with two games against the Vikings, a game against the Cowboys, and by the way, the Broncos have won five straight. That's going to be a tough four-game stretch to end the year. So winning games like this against New Orleans are, I think, critical. Getting your defense back on track at a time where it's really scuffling is critical. I think they can do it. But and if they do, Ben, they'll be 9-3. And with the Vikings off this weekend, they'll have a three-game lead in the North, which will be their biggest division lead ever in December. Until then, let's get to Eric Kramer, the last Lions quarterback to win a playoff game, to play a playoff game in Detroit at quarterback, and has a remarkable story to tell us. All right, Ben, with the Lions bearing down on, possibility of their first home playoff game since 1993, certainly looking to make some noise once they're in the playoffs, win a playoff game for the first time since 1991, we are joined now by the man who started at quarterback in both of those games for Detroit, Eric Kramer. Eric, I know it's early on the West Coast right now, so thank you for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me on. I know the Lions are a big topic right now in Detroit, and deservedly so.
Yeah, football's king in Detroit. And I mean, I've been on the beat since 2013, and it's always been easy to feel that, even when there were some really dark times, you can feel the passion in this town for football. It's pretty different, I think, than most places.
No doubt.
And now they're actually good, and the top has just come off this city. I'm sure you can feel it too.
I'll give you an example of that. So I live in LA. I've never had season tickets to anything in my life. A couple years ago, I got them for the Chargers. And the Chargers, probably the Rams too, but the Chargers literally play 17. They're the visiting team in 17 out of 17 games, meaning every home game is an away game for them. And so went to the Bears, came out here and played the Chargers. And that was the setting for the best Charger game probably in their history and the worst Bears game probably in their history. Still, it was an away game for the Chargers. And then get on the plane on the red eye and wake up in Detroit to go to the Raiders Detroit game. Just the opposite. I'm not sure there was a Raiders fan in there, and I'm sure there were, but you didn't hear them. And if they were probably tucked up in some corner, like in the bathroom somewhere. So in Detroit, much like Chicago, they are starving for a winner, and now they have one. And a good example of that is when they came out here to play, just and whipped up. You know, they beat the Chargers handily. And my girlfriend is talking about how this team, this Lions team, is in her mind a Super Bowl contender. And I said, I agree. Some knucklehead behind goes, "Whoa, pump the brakes!" Turn around, we're in Charger gear. I go, "How about you get your foot off the brake and get a win?"
I was out of that game too, obviously. And when Riley Patterson hit the game winner at the buzzer, it was so loud in there. Yeah. Like in the press box, we're in the kitty corner of the far corner of the end zone. So we have no vantage point on whether a field goal is good or not. I'm just looking at the refs, or I'm waiting for the crowd. And it was so loud after he made the kick that I thought he missed it. And then I just saw a celebration on the field. I'm like, oh my God, there's just this many Lions fans at SoFi.
Right. No, they are that good. It's been fun to watch this. I mean, I know they, from the top down, the organization finally has turned it over to Brad Holmes and what's obviously one of, if not the best coaching staffs in the league. And then a roster that fits everything they do, and they're deep. And I don't care if both running backs go down. They got another guy waiting that's, receivers, doesn't matter. And I love the fact that there was one reason the Rams lost to – there wasn't two. The Rams lost to the Patriots in Super Bowl. One, it was Jared Goff. Everyone can agree on that. I think everyone can also agree that he is probably, if he's not already, should be the leading vote getter in the MVP conversation. So a turnaround like that within, 4 or 5 years, because he was a cast off here to Detroit. He was like thrown in, like, please take him off our hands.
Yeah.
And think of how many teams right now that wish they would seem to take Jared Goff off the Rams' hands.
Mm-hmm. Probably quite a bit.
Eric, you have a book out that we'll get to in a moment called The Ultimate Comeback. We will get into that, I promise. But I'm just curious, your perspective, having started a home playoff game for Detroit, having won a playoff game for the Detroit Lions at quarterback, I'm curious, you were at the Lions-Raiders game, Monday Night Football, huge scene, obviously. What you saw that night, Lions-Raiders, the atmosphere, the excitement, how did that compare to what you remember from those days, having playoff success in Detroit?
Yeah, it was very similar. Of course, we were in a different building back then in Pontiac Silverdome. But when you start winning, and I don't care if you're wherever you're playing in Michigan, if you're winning, the fans there are incredible. For instance, so that playoff game you referenced, so I don't remember how many people fit in the Pontiac Silverdome, but whatever it was more than was allowed in there, guaranteed. And it was loud as can be. Like, even as the home, you couldn't think, much less talk, and get any, have somebody hear you. So that's what it was like at this Raiders game, that Monday night game. It was just, it was very cool to sit back and just watch it happen.
Yeah. And just what are your memories from that game? I mean, not only a playoff win for the first time in, what, 29 years at that point, but it's over the Dallas Cowboys, and it's an absolute butt whooping, 38-6. Like, what are your memories from that day and just, like, the reaction in Detroit after that goes down?
Well, I think it was just what I remember is we executed in every way you could. I don't care who we were playing. It was just like offensively, we barely missed a throw. In fact, the only guy early on to drop a pass was Barry. And defensively, it was a beatdown. It was tip ball interceptions for touchdowns. It was special teams was playing great. For me, it was just what you want to have happen is you want to be treated as though it's any other day, and you want to focus as though it's any other day. And it just happens to be a game and a playoff game at that. So, you know, that's what I guess in the aftermath of looking backward, you go, oh, wow, that was awesome. But in the moment, you really try to treat it as just like the next play and then the next play.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Eric, I've been, you know, thinking a little bit about in recent days as we prepare for very likely January football in Detroit. That locker room is full of guys who have not even been to the playoffs in Detroit. I know Goff has been to the playoffs elsewhere, and there's some other guys like that. But the roster is littered with guys who had never even been to the playoffs, or if they have, there's been no success. I think Taylor Decker and Graham Glasgow are the only Lions players, who have even been in the tournament, and that was for an ass kicking in Seattle. So right. I have been thinking about what the player experience will be like if they do have, you know, playoff football at Ford Field, just knowing the anticipation and the decades of anticipation. I mean, it's different than other places. It's the losing is so deep here. What's your perspective on what something like that is going to be like, you know, trying to contain your emotions and play your best ball, but knowing what the moment means to a place like this?
Well, I think part what you would want to do. So looking back, you know, you were talking about Dwight's comparisons to the two teams. We were very young with the Lions back then. Everybody was young. And I'm not sure anybody on that team had been to a playoff game. And so if you wait until you're in one to think about the severity of it, that's too late. So it's not the gravity of the situation that matters. It's whatever day of the week that you're playing the game on, like the Monday leading up should be the same kind of Monday, and so on and so on. And it's all about everybody talks about it. It's not the event itself, it's preparing for it. Mm-hmm. And so that should be a season-long culture in your locker room and up above as well. And so to me, that's what I see happening. I see it's a growing, building process that just really takes care of itself. And if you sit around and you start thinking, oh, my God, this is huge, Well, then it's going to be huger for the other team. And that's, you know, mentally anyway, and emotionally, that's to me the way you would want to move forward, is just as you would any other game. Yeah. I love, you know, think about last year when the Lions just, you know, somebody won and now they're out of the playoffs and they're going to play Green Bay. So some sideline reporter before the game asked Dan Campbell, okay, well, what motivation do you have to play for now? And he goes, well, they're not going to win.
Yeah.
And it didn't take any hesitation, thought process, whatever. And the funny thing that made me laugh is as we're walking out of the stadium the other day after the Lions won, which was packed, by the way, with Lions fans, one guy had on a blue kneecap biting tour t-shirt. And I pointed that out, and I was like, that is awesome.
That's fantastic. I just got one more on this current team, and there's a connection. One of your former teammates, we talked about the kind of top to bottom, the front office, the coaching staff, Chris Spielman's role in this. Just how explain how someone like that can kind of help bring it together on the football side, on the business side. What makes Chris special? I mean, we're watching training camp practices and he's in the middle of the field fixing divots. He's got a weight vest on and I'm looking at him. I'm like, this is a different dude right here. Like, so I'm just curious.
Like, so what, you're right. So when we were teammates, so everybody knows kind of the personality and tenacity Chris played with. So it was hard to beat him into, in fact, impossible to beat him into the building in the morning. So he was literally in there. I don't even know what time. I'm going to guess probably 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. And 6 o'clock would be too late, 5 o'clock hour for sure. And I remember calling him up last year. And I think the Lions were like 1-3 at the time. And I go, how is it you guys, or how is it the team is so good right now? And he goes, this coaching staff is ridiculous. And so, you know, I think Chris is the perfect guy to kind of be the go-between between ownership and the coaching staff. And by the way, you guys also have a former teammate of mine from college, Ray Agnew, who he was a freshman when I was a senior. And so he gets obviously drafted in the first round by the Patriots, then goes back and wins the Super Bowl with the Rams. And so we're having breakfast one morning, and it was during the COVID time. And so couldn't go over the building and say hi or anything like that. Next thing I know, he's on a plane for Detroit. And so I texted him while I was there, and he was, I guess, he was on the field. And I said, hold on, I'm waiting to get down there. And so he couldn't. So he was up in the box by the time I got there. But anyway, yeah, I think the fact that they're getting the right people in place, like you mentioned, from Chris Spielman on down, there's just a lot of good people involved who've enjoyed a lot of success along the way, whether it be as a player or a coach. And I just think that, you know, it's just awesome to see, as you can see yourselves, as you can feel being there. It's been a while since the Detroit Lions can say that we stack up against anybody. And they look to be in a situation where that's going to be the way for a long time.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Eric Kramer is our guest. He's got a new book out called The Ultimate Comeback. Eric, I did want to catch up with you about the book. And I think your story is well known at this point, your story of trial and perseverance. And for those who don't know, I don't really know how to say this delicately, but you put a gun to your head and you pulled the trigger, and you're with us today talking to us. I have some goosebumps even saying those words, and forgive me if I'm being a little blunt, but
no, it's great.
It's a remarkable story, Eric. I'm curious what you want people to know about your story, and I guess in specifically know about the book and what you've written.
As you mentioned, I've you know, been through quite a bit. I'm 59 years old now, and from being a little kid, you know, just kind of wanting to play sports, and football wasn't even my best sport growing up, but I was a long shot to even make it, and then somehow did. But, you know, I had a couple of parents that I wasn't real close with growing up, and then dealt with some depression while playing, and had a series of events happen once I was done, about, you know, even before Griffin passed away, which was my older son at the time. My mom had gotten sick with uterine cancer. Literally found out about it the day after Mother's Day in 2011. And that was a big shock to everybody. Griffin at that time was back in high school, because he, in his 10th grade year, had gone into inpatient drug rehab. for 3 months. And then it transitioned into an outpatient program where he wasn't going to school like a high school. He was going, there was like individualized schooling and was doing well that way. I could see, though, in Griffin that as this outpatient program began winding down, he kind of had his eye on the finish line, which in recovery, there's no such thing. And so, you know, I could see his thinking began to change from being grateful he was there to here, I'm just about to be out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and he did not have a good return to high school experience. Like school was never going to be his thing ever. And same way with fitting in with certain kids, that wasn't the environment for him. You know, he left a very controlled one to a very normal, just a regular public high school, which is not where he needed to be. That's where he came from. So in any event, Griffin, it didn't take long. I think the outpatient program, I think, finished in, February or March of 2011. And October 30th, I got a phone call in the morning from the sheriff's department to come down. And as I'm walking up the steps, the officer meets me outside and lets me know that Griffin didn't make it through the night. And so he apparently died of a heroin overdose. There's no way to describe virtually the crashing of emotions that brings. And yet, so my mom was still sick. She ends up having a, you know, radical surgery where they removed parts of several organs. And, you know, she survived that, but eventually she passed away about 8 months later in July of 2012. And then around that time, my dad, who I'd also not been close with, he had some untreated acid reflux, apparently, which then turned into esophageal cancer. And I don't know if you've ever had anybody contract that, but there's no way out from that. And so that was about a three-ish year downward spiral. So yeah, I at some point in all of that mess, I began to get, you know, this feeling came back of like driving down the street one day and go, uh-oh, this depression, here it is again. Only it went way down the hole. And so to reference back to your point, Mike, yeah, I did put a gun to my head and went, of all places, didn't want to, Dylan wasn't living with me. He was living with his mom at the time, who didn't live far away. And this depression kind of zaps you of any perspective. And one of the things that zaps you of perspective of is what it's going to do to everyone else. So for you, it's going to be over. For everyone else, it's going to be just the beginning. And you don't have any perspective of that. I thought I was doing the world a favor. And I remember, you know, Anna, who wasn't then but is now my girlfriend, we've been friends since high school. You know, she kept referring to this as an accident. And I said, this is not an accident. Or it wasn't an accident. This is very well calculated. And then a couple more years went by and I go, you know what? You're right. Because no one in their right mind would ever do this, like on purpose. And so, yeah, that's how I refer to it now. It's an accident. It's an accident in the sense that I had lost my faculties for sure and lost my perspective. And that is depression. The depression just kind of, it doesn't, there's no knock at the door going, here I am. And, or, you know, in 3 months, I'll be there. So make sure you get ready. So it's just, it's a hard thing to get around once you've got it. So the point here I'm trying to make is there's a lot you can do to prevent it from ever happening. So anyway, we can talk more about that or, you know, a lot of that's in the book. But the idea is that it's got a little something for everybody in terms of what this story tells. It's people that have read it have told me, you know, hey, I've got a son or a daughter who has talked about having depression before. I didn't know what to tell them. You know, And there's people that have had depression themselves and said, no one knows what I'm talking about. And then there's people that have had, you know, parents that they weren't close with. Or my dad had an overbearing driving. He drove me, all right, fine, but he didn't walk it himself. So there was plenty of times where I felt like I was his parent. And I'm sure there's people out there that have had a similar situation to that. That's just kind of been, you know, it's like maybe not talked about, but they've, you know, maybe never read anything before that someone else has dealt with that. So, but before both of my parents passed away, the way I think of them now is we're all products of where we come from and how we're raised. Neither one of them had anything close to what you would think, what you would want in being brought up. And so, there's a little, ironically, there's a little perspective in this book about someone who's gone through some stuff that in the looking back, I've changed my own perspective to where, like, the idea of forgiveness, you don't have to announce it. You know, that's an inside job.
Eric, you have a powerful story. It's obviously very difficult. You've been through the darkest times that a human can. So I appreciate you sharing with us. I know it probably can't be easy to not only go through, but to relive it over and over in these interviews and things like that as you go through a book tour. So I just wanted to say, I appreciate that. Hopefully it helps people out there. I know depression can feel like a lonely experience sometimes, that what you're feeling is unique to you, that people can't understand. So hopefully you sharing the things you've been through can help folks. I just want to ask one follow-up. I know Ben's got something for you too, but just to take our listeners back to that night or that day where you pulled the trigger. I'm just curious what you remember from that night, your state of mind, where you, the thing went down. I don't want to be insensitive.
No, it's okay. We're talking about August of 2015. It's now, not quite, but what, 9 years later-ish, 8-9 years later. And so I have a much different perspective now on life, much different, and even at that time. So, as I mentioned, I didn't want, even though Dylan wasn't living with me, I didn't want him coming in the house to see a dead father. So I chose a place called the Goodnight Inn, of all places. And that day, I spent all my time writing letters to people, Dylan being one of them. My other son. And I remember at one point during the day, like there was nothing left to do. And I was standing at the top of the stairs going, okay, well, now there is only one thing left to do. And so I put this gun in an overnight bag or something. I didn't take anything with me. And I remember sitting on the bed and literally just watching TV. And at some point, just said, okay, well, I guess now's the time. I don't remember much after that. I don't remember much leading up to that. But apparently I had, called or texted people or who knows what I did. And thankfully, I texted a friend of mine from high school who was at that very Lost Hill Sheriff's Department, which was right down the street from the hotel I was at. Anyway, Chris calls the station, calls the paramedics, whatever, and apparently he called me, and no answer on the cell phone, so he had I guess he called the hotel and asked for my room, which apparently I picked up the phone, and after that, I don't remember doing that, but apparently there was, someone at the door that I got up and opened and walked down into the ambulance, and I don't know what happened. Like after that, I think the next few years kind of went away.
Well, Lord, God willing, and thankfully you're still with us. And I mean, one of those things you talk about in this book is living with a purpose. And I'm just curious, you talk about depression, there wasn't something in place for people like going through that when you were playing back in the day. There wasn't even a place to talk about it. There probably wasn't even like a definition to know what you were going through. So I guess just living with purpose, how much purpose have you found in telling your story, being there, like just to listen, to talk, to share, you know, your highs, your lows and all of that, and just kind of how that has kind of just made this, I think you said it in the pitch of the book, a rebirth for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a couple of the things that I have, a couple of projects I have going on, two in particular. One is a mental health program for kids and families, and starting out at the age of, you know, what would be fourth and fifth and sixth graders. And there's a couple of people I'm working on this with. We want to get it into an elementary after school program and a middle school after school program. And just so happens that in Thousand Oaks, where I live, it's also where the Rams are currently and their practice facility. So there's actually two middle schools, one right down the street from where I live, where there's two, each has a boys and girls club on their campus. And so the idea of this program is it's going to be most likely a workshop environment, like a once a week workshop, where kids start to identify what characteristics in people their age or maybe even older that they can identify, hey, those are good characteristics to have. So at a young age like that, you want something to look up to. And it could be as simple as people who don't talk about other people is a good thing when they're not present, or somebody who's a good listener, obviously telling the truth and, you know, just reference the issue there. You want to have people that are empathetic. Then you want to learn how to approach somebody to build this support system, which I call a home team. And it could be people your own age. It could be people slightly older than you. It could be a parent, a coach, a teacher. And so then once you learn how to approach them, and you would say something like, hey, I'm putting this little home team together. Would you be willing to be on it? Meaning, could I come to you and tell you about some of the good things that are happening in my life? Could I come to you and tell you some of the things that are kind of making me feel a little, you know, not right? You know, if you start at 10 years old, by the time you graduate high school, you're 17, 18 years old. You've lived nearly half your life cultivating and noticing and hopefully earning your way onto someone else's home team, so that who's going to raise their hand and go, okay, give me a show of hands. Who wants to be a bully here? Ain't going to happen. And so you avert things that go along with depression, which would be anxiety and things where you get nervous in situations. We all get nervous, but we don't always know how to handle that. So those are all things that can be part of this program, so that, you know, depression typically comes along, at least in my experience, where it's not a collaborative effort, right? It's something that just conspires within you. And it kind of acts like a fog where pretty soon you can't see through. There's nothing to see through. It's just you inside of this cocoon. And so the opposite of that is collaborating with other people. And so that's the idea of starting it young and growing it as kids get older. The foundation really of how to communicate.
Eric Kramer, you have a unique story of trial and triumph and trial and triumph throughout your playing days and your post-playing days, and some of the ultimate highs in Lions football in the Super Bowl era, and some of the ultimate lows in the human experience. And you're here today to talk about it, and you're sharing with people. Hopefully, will help people. And certainly, it's been a pleasure catching up with you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
You're doing great stuff. Thank you.